This is Due By Friday, a weekly challenge podcast with Merlin Mann, Alex Cox, and Max Temkin. This week's challenge, pick the perfect album.
Oh, Merlin's on this morning.
No, I'm not. I'm so fucking tired.
We got all kinds of voices and characters and bits.
Oh. Don't play lawyer ball, son. Oh. That is our new breakout hit character, guy who impersonates Hank Hill.
The old guy from Beavis and Butthead.
Oh. Mr. Anderson. I don't remember to pay the electric bill, but I know Mr. Anderson. Oh, shit, dog. I'm tired. Woo. Halloween, baby.
Let me propose how I think we might do this episode.
Yes.
I think we should do... I think we should set up the challenge right away so we can talk about it during the episode. But I have a lot of other items that I want to discuss, but I already want to start making observations about the music.
Max, I like this idea a lot.
Merlin, it was your challenge. Please set the challenge up for us. What was the challenge this week?
Challenge. Well, the challenge started
Front matter.
You know, just for what it's worth, fucking Syracuse now in our Google Doc, if I say front matter, you know what he does? He cuts it out. He does not acknowledge front matter as a thing.
Why?
Where did front matter come from? Was that a Mike Hurley, Jason Snell?
No. It's me, because I think in the beginning it's sensible to have a bulleted section in the Google Doc. This is Inside Baseball. You're getting this for free. You gotta giveusyourfuckingmoney.com and give us your fucking money. We'll talk about that. I think in the Google Doc it's valuable to have follow-up items, but also to have what in the literary world, in the bookmaking world, is called front matter. And that's stuff that's not follow-up, but it's the kind of thing you want to mention at the top of the show.
Oh, that's what front matter is. Merlin, do you ever make a YAML file?
I've made a YAML file.
What do they call that business at the header of the YAML? The YAML.
You had your YAML with like you could do that with the Markdown document. You could
that's your fucking front matter
that's
right
your
there.
Fucking front matter. It's a metadata. And so, you know, if it's Syracuse, he cucks me. He goes in there and he fucking edits the document. He takes out spaces at the end of sentences.
Oh, wait a minute. Are you a double spacer?
No. You ready to go like fucking inside the looking glass? You know who double spaces after a period? Consistently?
Who?
Fucking John Syracuse.
No.
He's
Why?
A double
what
spacer.
Is he a typewriter guy or something like that?
He's so broken inside.
People who learn to type on a typewriter, I understand the impulse because the reason is it's how you used to, because typewriters were monospace. It's how you would sort of legibly write sentences. So I understand that if you're nine years old,
it makes it's what you learned. Yeah. It's like the same way you learn to capitalize. You learn where to put a comma, like a gentleman,
right?
And you always have two spaces after.
Right. I understand that. I'm already dreading having to learn new gestures on my iPhone to go into multitasking. If I learned how to type with hitting that space bar,
I want to hear about that, because the way Jason Snell described it very kindly, it sounds like a fucking mess.
It's fantastic. Mm. We're in the Minority Report era.
Okay. Save it for the show.
I'm so excited.
Front matter, Syracuse. He's just a tall, angry bag of arbitrary opinions, big meat bag of opinions. No, he's not a good person.
Not arbitrary. I wouldn't say arbitrary. What's Syracuse's most arbitrary opinion?
If you live in the United States, you are simply not permitted to use words and phrases that he regards as Britishisms. It makes him furious in a way that I find frankly hilarious.
But that's not arbitrary. Cultural appropriation.
You know, you're right.
No, it's not. It's not a cultural appropriation thing. But I actually agree with John.
You nicked me word, governor.
I experience secondhand embarrassment. That's why it upsets me. Is if someone's like, "Oh, I'm going on holiday," I'm like, "Fuck you, fuck you for making me feel embarrassed." Like, I imagine if I let that slip, how embarrassed, how much. Listen, here's the thing.
Yeah,
I watch a lot of British TV, and I like Great British Bake Off, and in the back of my head, in the little subroutine that starts forming sentences, I will start to hear myself go like smashing, and then I'll catch it before it comes out of my mouth, and I'll be like, alert, do not say that, you will embarrass yourself. When I started, but I'm very susceptible to this, like when I hear people talking a lot, or if I hear an audiobook narrated by someone with a tic, or for me it was when I started watching fuck, what's the Japanese Terrace House. When I started watching Terrace House, in Japan, when someone says something disagreeable, so like if Alex is like, Apple makes bad computers, mm-hmm. it would be very impolite. I wouldn't be like, shut up, you're an idiot, you don't know what you're talking about. That is not the Japanese response. What Japanese people do is they take a beat. Alex, say a bad opinion to me.
Pandas are stupid and we should domesticate them.
Oh, that's good. You respond in the Japanese style. That's
or the other thing is if someone says something very like if one of the guy if a girl will like ask someone out on a date, they also take a long pause and they go, It's a thoughtfulness. It's the way that Japanese people like when you get handed if you hand someone a business card, they'll like look at it.
You got to hold it in the two hands by the corners, right? Isn't there a whole etiquette to that?
Yes, there's a whole business card ritual.
You don't like jam
in
your pocket and go, thanks, bro.
Yeah, but it's like, but the idea is that you want to, it's like if, whether someone says something, you do not want to let your emotions get a hold of you. You like take a pause, you go, It's respectful. It demonstrates that you're like considering their opinion or their offer, whether it's gracious or stupid or whatever. But I started doing that just because I was watching so much fucking Aloha State and you just go, And it's a great little tick to pick up because it gives you an extra beat to answer a question or you know, not fly off the cuff if someone says something stupid. But anyway, when someone does that with the British thing, it's like I recognize that impulse in myself to say like it's a bit, you know, if someone shows me something and I want to go like, oh, it's a bit higgledy-piggledy. And it's like, don't say that. That's embarrassing.
Okay, listen, pop quiz hotshot. You guys got a second. We'll do a quick quiz here and find out where your line is. Are you ready?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, you need to take an elevator to get to the third floor. Your friend says, shall we take the lift? How do you feel about
only
that?
Only if I can eat my crisps, bitch.
Yeah. Your friend happens to mention that they met this person when they were at university.
No.
That's humiliating. I already feel embarrassed. I feel embarrassed on their behalf.
Okay,
no.
If I'm an American, you would not accommodate that.
No, because it's a guy who wears like two polo shirts and he went to, you know, Penn State.
Okay. And somebody says, trying to make a decision, you say, you think of that as an either stroke or situation.
Excuse me?
Either stroke.
Stroke for slash. How do you feel about stroke?
You having a laugh?
You having a laugh? That's good. Nice pull. I got to type up your CV. Let's see. You broke your arm. You have to go to hospital.
So minus the article of the...
I would assume that you also incurred some brain damage.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Oh, we're almost done.
In the accident.
So you have to take a huge shit and you excuse yourself because you need to go to the loo.
No.
Unacceptable. Unacceptable to say the loo. I would assume that you're a huge fucking nerd who's into steampunk and has like,
yes.
And you're probably in a poly relationship and you want to talk to me about it and you watch a lot of Doctor Who and that's why you say that you have to go to the loo. However, wait a minute. The British do have one other incredible bathroom vocabulary technology that is very good to me, which is they do not say they're going to the loo to take a shit. They say they're going to the loo to do a shit. Or alternately, you could say, Governor, I just did a huge shit.
That's very funny.
It's very funny to me to say you did a huge shit.
You go to the WC, you do a huge shit.
Yes.
You know, it's another good.
You don't take it. You don't leave it.
Leave it.
It's way funnier. When the cards got, we discovered that when we were writing UK edition Cards Against Humanity, and we did some joke about doing a shit, and there's a British advertising bear called Pudsey Bear. So we did a card that was doing a huge shit in Pudsey Bear's eye hole. And I don't think it made it into the game, but it's just the phrase doing a shit is just so funny.
Yeah, I just respond to you by saying,
Oi, mates, who did a shit in the shower?
Okay, last one.
We're just quoting our favorite what's that guy the director that you like? Shaun of the Dead. Now we're just quoting Shaun of the Dead.
You got some red on you. Last one. You're closing up your email and you want to be friendly. You say cheers.
Oh, I do that.
I fucking hate it so much.
I think it's embarrassing and bad, but also I'm guilty of doing it.
Well, it's
when's
your
it appropriate?
Fault.
When's it appropriate?
It's cards. Okay, like it's just
Let
in
me
the lexicon.
Let me ask you this. Okay, when I have a very terse email style, right? Mm-hmm. If someone sends me an email and I can reply and just say no,
screenshot it and put it on Twitter.
Well, that's a little bit different. But if someone writes me an email that's not obnoxious or asking me to do something for free that where I want to publicly excoriate them, I will just, you know, if I can reply back with four words like, I'm sorry, I can't make this work, or no, or, you know, or this is great, I love it. Like, that's it. That's it. Like, I don't need to, I feel, I understand that it is sort of the accepted convention among humans in our society that you write an email of, like, commensurate detail and length of the one that you received.
I know.
If someone spent a long email writing to you, and but then you could just be like, I'm sorry, I just can't make this work. It's like you owe them like a whole thing. And I know that it's rude to do that, but I do it anyway. But then I sometimes feel like if I put cheers at the end of it, what I'm hoping to convey is, although it might, you might project onto me feelings of like anger or negativity because of how terse this email is, mm-hmm. I'm not mad. I just
no.
It's don't want to write
a long email. Offset credit.
Right, a TOC. I mean, that's what you're trying to bank those TOCs, but it's just like, you're just trying to be like, I'm not mad. I just don't want to waste my time here.
Can I give you a punctuation hack?
Please. Okay.
I have found that an exclamation point is worth about one paragraph of enthusiasm.
Yes.
So if you're like, thanks, this is great, exclamation point.
Does it
that
scale?
Sounds good.
Is two exclamation points worth two paragraphs?
I think so, but not like at the end.
Two exclamations. I first of all, I totally agree with you, Alex. I have bent to this convention because reasons. It's true. My only thing would be, if you're going to go with the two exclamation points, I think you need to start with an oh my God or a holy shit. That if somebody sends you something really cool, like they buy you a cool domain name, if you're gonna go that ejaculatory and you want to get out fast, you got to start with a holy shit or oh my God.
People always sound like they're yelling when they have an exclamation point to me, though.
Thank you. Oh my God.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
I'm so excited to work with you.
I just made a bear in my loo. Regards.
Wow, thank you for this kind gesture.
Oh my God, I appreciate the kind words. best.
Now I'm very, when I use capital letters, I mean it. I'm very excited. I am indeed shouting in my head.
An emoji.
Like LOL, I am literally chuckling to myself. I care very much about these conventions.
I think we can all agree people should just stop sending email.
And text messages. Yeah. What about no punctuation at all in text messages to just get out all nervousness of like, everyone be like, oh, was it passive aggressive? Oh, are they not excited?
Where, I can't remember. I've already forgotten the battle lines on the Rectifs, the great episode about text message etiquette. But Merlin, I can't remember. Were you a We All Live in a Society guy?
Yes. Yes. No, but
I'm actually on your side.
Well,
I think
it's you, if it's us or it's Syracusa or it's somebody I know I can be an actual decent human being with, I type typographically and punctuationally correct English sentences, including like offset commas a lot of the time.
My feeling on this is it's a pretty old man opinion, but my feeling on this is that there's like thousands of years of experimentation with language, and we've sort of settled on these conventions because they're easy to remember and they have specificity and great emotional range. And if it's available to you to type on your phone and use like real words and sentences, that you should probably go ahead and take advantage of our entire canon of written communication.
It's your legacy. And so, I mean, like, I understand this notion that, like, if you're typing a lot, like, all day long, if you're, like, a typical young-ish person who's communicating a lot through photographs and short bursts of text, I understand that, and that's a convention. I understand that. But now, recall, if you will, your Sun Tzu. You go and you look at, go look at Don Jr.'s email about the meeting, right? Which is not punctuated correctly. And every time somebody reads it, they add the right punctuation to it to make it make sense. And I think that's fucked up. I think you need to read that sentence as he wrote it. If he wanted to write that with correct punctuation, he would have, but he didn't. I think we need to hang that out for everyone to see. Media, please stop correcting the punctuation and grammar. If the current inhabitant of the White House says something on Twitter, don't fix it to make it make more sense. You have to read it exactly as he wrote it. And if it's all caps, you got to say it in all caps because that's what he said. Are you with me on this? Like, okay, if you're going to do it.
I love a good bracket sick
sick, sad. Oh, the best is the parentheses. The parentheses,
oh,
especially
God, yes.
when he's really feeling especially touchy, he'll have two sets of parentheticals. You know, the D's, which left very badly, parent, and then go in, and important for tax break, coal, MAGA.
So now with that out of the way, what was the challenge?
Challenge. Okay, so this is one you guys have initially, I think, I forget who it was. It might have been Max, but we had this idea a long time
Alex.
Ago.
Who?
Alex?
Nothing. Sorry, go ahead.
Max had this idea that we should pick out what we consider a perfect album or our perfect album. Now, as you're already seeing with my struggling with this, what we chose is probably not going to be nearly as interesting as how we chose it. But the idea was, by whatever criteria you define, A, pick what you consider a perfect album, B, be prepared to suffer the slings and arrows of your co-host because they're going to make fun of you for your terrible taste and tell you why it's not perfect. And that was the challenge. And so we each picked one late last week and sent it to each other, and we've theoretically listened to them. And that's the challenge.
All right, Merlin, what was your, let's start with you. What was your album pick? We don't need to get into a whole thing. I think we should just set these up for people so that we can start the casual making fun of the albums as we move through our episode.
I thought you might want that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I really struggled, and I really want to talk about the process. But I picked Libertine by Silkworm, the 1994 album from Silkworm. What'd you guys pick?
I picked Cloud Cult. My favorite band, and the first album of theirs that I got into, Advice from the Happy Hippopotamus, from 2005.
I picked Celebration Rock by the Japandroids.
From?
2012. I think it was 2012.
Yeah.
The reason I thought it was funny was we picked albums that were almost exactly a decade apart from each other, more or less commensurate with our ages.
Mm-hmm. Oh, how funny. That didn't occur to me.
As soon as Veronica and I listened to them, and as soon as we were like looking at them, she's like, isn't this kind of funny that you all picked albums that are exactly 10 years apart from each other?
That's so telling.
And sort of are very emblematic of the music of your micro, like,
yeah,
tranche.
Well, and yeah, it reminds me of the bit on Mr. Show where, you know, the kids always want to play video golf, and David, Bob and David break character. Bob's like the old guy with the bald wig, and he's like, you know, we're from different generations. I'm into Star Wars, and you love that Empire Strikes Back shit. It's true. There's these little microclimates around all these. I'm sitting here looking at my list, and which I shared with you, and I'll share with our listeners. 2003, 1997. Yeah, I mean, it's all 90s and 2000s, except for some that are from the 70s.
I was listening just this morning while I was in the shower to you and Roderick talk about how your feeling of Generation X being like completely passed over in terms of a generation that has like holds like cultural and political power, like it's right. Going straight from the baby boomers to the millennials, mm-hmm. which is more or less like a numbers game, I think. But also, like,
also we just didn't accomplish much. We didn't try very hard. We didn't accomplish
well. There
very
was
much.
There was the. I mean, I would refer you to the great Roderick essay, "Punk Rock is Bullshit."
Oh boy.
Real barn burner of an essay.
I think he's still getting emails about that.
I think it's great. I mean, I actually don't think it's much of a commentary on the music itself, but it's the culture. But anyhow, you know, I was listening to that and thinking, like, man, I really have to say, like, in that conversation, I identify much more strongly with the Gen X folks than the millennial folks. And my age group of people who are like 30 right now, like, I technically am a millennial according to the, you know, whatever the bracket of the generation is, if you go look it up on Wikipedia. But I don't feel like a millennial. I feel like I have way more in common with people who are 20 years older than me than people who are 5 years younger than me.
That's so interesting because I'm just on, depending on how you measure it, and sometimes it's real hairy how people decide this, but I am technically, I could go either way. I'm technically at the tail end of the baby boom, but I am pretty well and truly at the beginning of Generation X.
Oh, you're a Gen X? Like the music you like,
some people, I think this is dumb personally, but I've seen some people say the baby boom goes from, what, 1945 to like 1963 or something like that, which I think seems kind of crazy, but that's a more cultural view of it rather than a strictly like, well, everybody came home and, you know, made bears in their loo and kids came out, you know.
You have to have a conscious memory of the 60s to be a baby boomer. You can't have been 1 year
that's
old
true. That's true.
In the 60s and been like, I relate to the baby boomer generation. Like, we relate to what? Like, you weren't alive for it. But I think, I mean, to me, I think that one of the big fault lines between the generations right now is like technology and like how they understand technology and identity and technology as a tool in their life and what its pros and cons are and all of that. And like, I was part of, I did not grow up with the internet as a young kid. I was in middle school by the time we got internet in the house. So, and that was like through, you know, AOL and IRC and, you know, these way more like, I don't know, like, what was it? Like, well, we've talked about my like materialist theory of internet access of like back then you had to be like both smart and be able to afford a computer in order to talk online.
And very importantly, and this is not a slam, it's just an observation. It was, I mean, first of all, you've got the fact that most of the servers were at universities or were right. corporate in the case of AOL with the walled garden, but it was a very text-based environment. We came up, you and I both, sounds like you were very young when you got it. I was in my 20s, but I got on in 93 with a Telnet account, and it was all just pure text. I mean, if you could download a photo, kind of, like from a Gopher site, but it was an entirely text-based medium with a fairly rich culture of etiquette around it and like what's yes. appropriate. BBSs, I came to BBSs before the internet, and like there's this shit you do not do on a BBS or you're gone that day. So I mean those are a couple differences. And now today I just get the feeling it's a very, you know, it's a graphical environment. It's all about the images.
Well, and I mean, I think that's totally true. But also, like, I think kids have a whole different conception of ideas about privacy and performance and identity. And I don't, the less we say about this, the better probably, but it's obviously something that's like the idea that there's a generation of kids where their like main place that they go is Snapchat. That's like their home is crazy. It makes no sense to me.
How do you self-identify, Alex?
I don't know. I just realized now, as you guys were talking about this, I don't remember a time without the internet. I remember right. a time when I wasn't allowed to use the internet because it was this like big, scary place. But, you know, I had the alias Horse Gal 7. I don't even particularly like horses. It was just
sometimes you have to destroy them.
Yeah. No.
So it's just the torso. But you know, that's why the phrase before millennials, before they came along, the phrase we were using was digital native, right? So, which is this really dorky Wired kind of phrase, but it is sensible in that sense that, okay, what's the first, when is the first year somebody was born that the internet and connectivity and something like always on connectivity was not a novelty, but was just as familiar as like the phone was to my generation, right? That I think that's, is that kind of?
Yeah, I mean, my big thing was like having an iPhone was obviously a big shift.
Alex, did you ever come home from school and talk to your friends on the phone for over an hour?
Yes. Oh, I don't.
Did you ever talk on the phone so long that it became the coiled cord got tangled around your body became like an issue that you had to stop and sort out.
Your ear got raw and red.
Yeah. I don't ever recall having a wired phone.
Oh, it would get so wet. It would get so wet in there.
Mm-hmm. Really wet and red, like a rashy yes. taint. Yeah, that's your ear after talking to your friend.
I still remember Ben Hantoot's and Josh Dillon's numbers from when I would get home from school so we could call and talk about video games that we could play someday.
Jeez.
That we didn't own, but we would call and talk about what units we would build and how we would strategize. And we didn't have the games, but we would discuss what they might be.
I think this was actually more of an issue of me not having friends, really. Mm. I would have probably done that in middle school if it was an option. But being Horse Gal 7 was easier.
You hacked the system. Horse Gal 7?
Horse Gal 7.
Really?
Well, because girls like horses.
They're so majestic. It's
a special bond. You could never understand it. Merlin, you went trick-or-treating last night.
Mm-hmm.
I saw someone was dressed as the giant inflatable Minion costume.
Oh, dugga, dugga, dugga. So you saw a photo. I put a picture of my kid on the internet, which you're not supposed to do. But it's a picture of my kid. We're getting ready to get on the train. My daughter is the warrior princess with a sword. And my wife was like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to wear the Minion costume. I was like, you're so not going to wear the Minion costume. She's like, oh, no, I'm going to wear the Minion costume. So my wife, who had not...
It's so cool.
She's the only one in the house that had not worn the Minion costume. We're getting ready to leave. We're running late. And she's standing there on our front steps, like taking off her shoes and committing to the Minion costume for the first time. She rode public transit that way.
Oh.
She kept it on until it was not tenable anymore. Because it took us... It took us 20 minutes to move about 30 feet because she got pictures and hugs, and she was real game. My wife's really, really sweet. She's a very nice person, and she loves kids, and we could not move. There was a line of Hulks waiting to be photographed with the minion, and they all came up and were like, Beto, Beto, Beto. It was incredibly cute. So yeah, she totally committed. She came out and she was sweaty.
Wow, so I guess you could say I really saved Halloween, huh?
Oh, it was the best Halloween ever. Thank you, Max.
Wow. Who would have thought?
She was mistaken for a boy named Brandon several times because apparently Brandon was dressed up like that too. So there could have been a wacky mix up your suitcase type situation. But, no. I'm just glad she didn't get sucker punched or anything. It feels like it was a success. I did not see any Donald Trumps. Oh yeah,
you got to play the knockout. I didn't see any Trumps either.
I saw no Donald Trumps.
So last year was we had just moved into the house, and if you remember, my optical cable.
Yeah.
And it was our first Halloween where we could get trick or treaters because I always lived in apartment buildings before being a homeowner. But we didn't really. We have a weird door on the side of the house, and it's sort of. It's just no one came to our house because they didn't understand that there was candy to be had. So, and I went to Costco. This was last year. I went to Costco and I bought 20 boxes of candy to give out, and we wound up with 19 boxes of candy at the end of it. And there were tons of kids. They just weren't coming to our house. So this year, we got cool, colorful lights and put them in the windows. And I put.
Did I see full size bars in your collection?
Oh, let me tell you, I went. I did this last year too, but I went fucking balls out with the Halloween candy, full size bars, and I got extra boxes of the Kit Kats and the Reese's cups, which are for sure the best candies. Mm-hmm. But we went to Costco this year. Oh, so this year we decorated the house. I put a little Bluetooth speaker playing the Harry Potter soundtrack outside the house. I made these little cool paper bag lanterns with funny faces on them outside the house.
I love
very
this side of you. I never would have guessed
very,
this.
It looked very inviting and enticing so that the children would come to my house. But when we were at Costco, I was like, how many boxes of candy do you think we should get? 20 boxes, 30 boxes? And Veronica was like, how about 6? And I was like, how about 7? And she was like, okay, 7. And then, we also got additional boxes. So we wound up with 8 because we added supplemental bars to the mix boxes that we got. Those were gone by 6:30 p.m. And we had to put a sign on the door that said, yeah. So we gave out something 500 pieces of candy in about 90 minutes. And then I had to put a sign on the door saying no more candy.
So you saw a lot. You got a good cross section of kids in costume.
Holy shit. So we got a lot of adorable kids. I saw a lot of homemade costumes, especially with, honestly, the younger the kid, the better the costume, because they have less, they're less embarrassed, right? So they can be cute and clever. And then once they get older, they kind of want to be a franchise because there's safety in that I can't be made fun of if I'm Iron Man. Does that track?
Yeah. Yeah, it does. Well, I mean, there's one of the costumes going around on Twitter that's very cute, but it's a legit baby dressed as Wayne from Wayne's World, and what looks to me like probably an Irish wolfhound with glasses that looks exactly like Garth, which is absolutely hilarious until you pause to go, neither one of those creatures understands what they're supposed to be. So there's one period where you dress your baby we dressed our baby like a tomato, and it was super cute. She didn't know what a fucking tomato was. Then they get to a certain age. But then on the other end of that, you're right. You get to the Iron Man phase where you're I've got to be a sexy cheerleader or whatever.
The sweet spot is a 6-year-old who was dressed as just a truck made out of a cardboard box.
Yeah, or at least in second grade, is just I just want to be an Egyptian queen. I love everything about Egypt. Her little friend whose party we went to over the weekend, she just wants to look like a cool Egyptian queen. Or it could just be you'll still see a cowboy sometimes. You'll just see or a soldier or
You have to be 30. You have to be 30 again before you have enough self-esteem to wear an actual cool costume.
Right. It's true.
But then there was also those were kind of the spectrum of the children. But then there were also a lot of teenagers who were very vaguely very threatening to me, and I was very scared of them. And they would just wear one piece of a costume, have a cloak or a mask or a fake a hand or something. One item that I bought that allows me to do the trick or treating, and they would always roll up on the house and they'd be like, trick or treat, and someone would be on their phone, and they would always recognize the value of the full size candy bars, and they would go, can we have more than one? And I just
what?
And I would just desperately don't want to be made fun of by teenagers. I was just like, just please don't laugh at me. Just take anything you want. Just what do you want? My come in the house. What do you want? What do you want? Do you want a television? Just come in.
Teens are very threatening. They're not afraid of death. They don't know what they're doing. They're confused.
ISIS, Merlin. They're not afraid to die.
They just don't know it's even an option.
Oh my God, they're very frightening.
They have no middle brain. They won't have a middle brain for 10 years.
So the teenagers would come up and they'd be like, can I have more than one? And I'd be like, sure. And I'd be like, sure, I'm cool. Take as many as you want. But I'm sweating because I know that we are getting down on the boxes. And then they'd come back. They'd start leaving.
No.
And then one of them would turn back and go, let me grab a few more. And they'd be like, huh, okay. And, you know, I'd hold the bowl out for them. And they'd take some. And eventually, Bobby was over. And Bob, I'm not good at this. Like, the kids come over, and I'm always, like, a little bit late to the door, and they're always a little bit, then they get a little sketched out, because they're like, if you don't open the door immediately, it's a little bit weird of, like, yes. Are they home, or were they in the shower, or, like, what's going on here? But so I was, like, a minute late to the door, and I'd always get there, and I'd be like, happy Halloween, and give some candy out. Bobby took over for me on candy duty, and holy shit, he would fucking fling that door open and he'd go, happy Halloween! He'd get down on his knees with the bowl and give the kids the candy, and the teenagers would come and they'd be like, can I have more than one? He'd be like, well, then there won't be enough for anyone else, sorry.
Oh, it's a power move. He's owning that situation.
He was so good at it.
He was so cool with
kids in a way that I am totally not.
What is the acceptable age to stop trick-or-treating?
At what age
should you stop trick-or-treating?
Or do you mean the acceptable age of how old can you go?
Yeah.
I mean, well, no, I think...
So, like, let's take an extreme example. If a baby came to your door, it would seem strange by himself, his or herself. If a 35-year-old man with a little bit of blood on his cheek showed up, that's probably a bridge too far. So you're thinking, like, 11 or 12, that seems fine, right? 13, 14, maybe. Like, you're asking, like, what is the age where, like, even if you're in a group of your idiot friends, you probably shouldn't be trick-or-treating in costume? Is that the question?
I'm asking, what is, like, a graceful age to retire from your trick-or-treating career?
14.
So I went trick-or-treating. I think that's about right. I mean, I remember going trick-or-treating in 7th or 8th grade with my middle school friends, with the nerds, and we were too old. It felt wrong at 13 going to... I mean, I was already bar mitzvahed. I was a man. Mm-hmm. And it felt wrong going to people's house and ringing the bell and getting free fun-sized, you know, candy and stuff. It just was like, this is wrong. And you could also, you'd look around and you were the oldest people out and you're like,
as an asterisk, like if you're accompanying like little kids and you're in costume, I say more power to you. If you're 17 or 18,
there were fucking 40-year-old men taking candy out of my bowl, but they had a child with them and it was acceptable.
But you still want to impress them a little bit. I checked our door cam while we were gone. We had absolutely zero trick-or-treaters. Even though there's a big bowl we left outside, I gave out exactly 2 pieces of candy and they were both to delivery men. I gave a candy to my Amazon guy. I gave a candy to my DoorDash guy, and that was it.
How is that possible? I don't want to compromise your operational security, Merlin.
Well, I mentioned this on the Back to Work program, but I think there's been it's probably different where you are. But well, here's the thing: is there are destination neighborhoods. There are some neighborhoods that are especially game that become well known as like, okay, lots of people like do a haunted house or do up there. You know what I mean?
I live in such a neighborhood.
Okay, so that I think that's the trend. You either go to the mall, you go to a retail area, or you go to like where the good stuff is, like a Bob's Burger type situation. And you know Max Tempkin's going to have some full-size bars and wants to impress a youth. So, you know.
Oh, shit. Someone came up to the door, and as they were leaving, we got a lot. The kids fucking lost their minds for the full-size candy bars.
Oh,
listen,
so
people. You have no idea the joy. People would literally, someone literally said, God bless you to me when they looked in the bowl. And people, they would scream. The children would scream. They go, ah! They'd look in the bowl. They could not contain themselves. They were so excited. But the other thing was, there was a fucking, some people were about, I gave the kids the candy, they were leaving, and then one of the grown-ups says, as they're walking away, they go, there was no Cards Against Humanity for the adults? And I was like, oh, I'm not comfortable with that. I don't like that one bit.
Sweet. So they knew that you live, did they just, how do they know
what?
It's you?
That's a great question.
Ew.
I don't know.
God. Ew.
That should Isn't that be really nice, but it's so creepy.
I know.
Oh, geez. Oh.
A little weird.
You know what? You're right. I mean, we bought, you saw, I sent you a photo of what we got. We got a bunch of little bars that our household likes, knowing that we're hardly going to have any kids. But
let me zoom in. Let me get the old privacy clown activated.
I can see an Aaron Kubik hair on your rug.
Merlin, you got to be careful. Some of those could be weed candies. Are you looking out for the, because I heard that
edibles. They're giving edibles to kids. That's
they're just giving the edibles out to the kids.
Razors in the edibles.
I'm scrolling up. Where's this picture? Is it the three little bags of candy?
Yeah. But understand, Max, we had zero trick-or-treaters. And we know that, like, in the most extreme case, we will get 10 trick-or-treaters, maybe.
Wait a minute. How could they? It can't be safe to eat glow-in-the-dark M&Ms. What is that?
Ooh.
Yeah, glow-in-the-dark.
Mm-hmm. How do they get them to glow-in-the-dark?
Well, I mean, you know, the motivation. I think it's the package that's glow-in-the-dark, I think.
Oh, it's not. It's not the candy.
Bullshit.
Okay.
Come on.
I thought they were like a depleted uranium M&M or something like that.
Do you guys know how Pop Rocks works?
No.
Is that something Rana could explain to me?
Yeah.
I'm very motivated. Probably,
what is it? Yeah, it's a good question, actually.
Let's learn about Pop Rocks.
Uh-oh, here goes the program.
No, it's just for my own edification.
I'm sorry, guys. My brain is still in the movie It. Like, I'm real off today.
You're kidding. You went to see that?
Did you just watch It?
Yeah. Well,
too
I
scary
went to see
for me.
I couldn't make it through the trailer.
You didn't do trick-or-treating?
Shit.
You didn't get anyone at your Blue Lives Matter house?
Here's what happened. We just left out a bowl
Of American flags that say thank you for your service.
Just on, like, because it's, I essentially live in what, here's a question. Can I say a three flat? Is that something
is that
an American says?
You know,
I don't know
what that means. I'm never
it's
sure what does it mean when
other.
Someone says a three flat or a row house?
A flat,
I don't know what those mean.
I've gone around with John Syracuse on this. He refuses to believe that flat is a thing. A flat is when an apartment is in a building of units that are all roughly the same size on different floors. A flat is when you have a floor of a building for your occupancy.
Yes, no, that's how my building works.
It's like how, it's like you don't, but no one says that. They say, we have the whole floor.
You've seen my building. It's relatively like skinny. And so each person like has a floor, but it's essentially an apartment building, but it's not a duplex. There's just three floors.
What's a duplex? Those are the blocks with the.
No, that's just like two apartments.
You're talking about the little kid Legos? No, a duplex is when you have two units that are next to each other in the same building.
Wait, really?
I think that's when you grab someone's neck and you flip them over and then you sort of slam them into the ground.
Oh, right. Like a, yeah. Now, there was a guy in Florida that used to pronounce that souple, or souple.
Oh, actually, it's a 2003 comedy film directed by Danny DeVito, starring Ben Stiller and Drew Barrymore. Okay.
We all remember that movie.
Yeah.
Meet cute.
So you saw It and you're feeling off. You didn't do any. Mm-hmm. You had no engagement with trick or treating.
I just left a bowl out, and it
and
was
you,
like
you don't get a lot of trick or treaters.
You were home and you left a bowl out?
No, I was not home.
Oh,
I was
okay.
seeing
That's
a very
right.
scary adult movie, and it was really upsetting. But
you saw It on Halloween? What is wrong with you?
I was downtown anyway, and I don't know. It was quite fun. But yeah, it's just left a bowl out, and my neighborhood is like, it's weird because half of the neighborhood is like buildings like mine where if you ring the doorbell, you have to like go downstairs to get
right.
the person, and the other half is a gated community. So most of the kids, I think, just stay in the gated community and get all the rich people big, like not just regular size candy bars, like the king size Reese's cups. And so I don't know who. I have a feeling Blue Lives Matter guy probably just passed by our door and was like, okay. But yeah, I was
waited to dress down kids dressed as cops. You're stealing valor.
All right. Do we have any other important Halloween business? Because we got to keep this thing. We got to keep this thing moving.
Can we just as a little bit of front matter? Do you guys know who bought us that wonderful domain name? Because we should thank them.
Right. That's right. So. Where to even start with this? So, as you know, Merlin,
yeah.
the jail is where we keep all the criminals.
Mm-hmm.
Let me look up.
I'm so adrift right now.
As you know, yep. hang on. I want to look up some good "As You Know, Bob" dialogue.
Oh, I see.
I was going to do an "As You Know, Bob," but then I couldn't think of any. Let's
well, as
see.
As you know, we're
from
going to have to
live
wait 20 minutes
films.
To recharge the photon torpedo.
Yeah.
Go to TV Tropes.
I'm on TV Tropes right now. I'm looking for a good one.
Steve Jobs, as you know, we have already received all the Time magazines. Steve, as you know, the exit signs have to be lit up. Steve, as you know, you're Steve Jobs. I am from a country.
He made an iPod for his daughter, so she'd love him again.
Oh, my God, that's so sweet. Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. He's so misunderstood.
Oh, my God.
It's not a good movie. It's a very, very bad
movie. Dear God, Obi-Wan, Qui-Gon Jinn would never join you. Count Dooku, don't be so sure. You forget he was once my apprentice, just as you were once his. but from my point of view, the Jedi are evil. All right. Anyway, Merlin, as you know, we have a super secret channel, our after show that people can subscribe to find out what the upcoming channel is. So, for example, if people wanted to know that we were choosing our sort of favorite albums that we wanted to have ridiculed, they could know that in advance and play along with us. And they do that by giving us their fucking money. That's $5 right. a month. You get access to a whole other episode of the podcast every single week. And that is at GiveUsYourFuckingMoney.com. Thank you to whoever bought that for us.
Do you know Alex?
I do, but I don't know. I don't have their Twitter handle. I only have their real name in an email, so I don't want to say it. However,
can you say their first name? Listener
Lata.
Thanks, Lata.
Thank you, Lata.
I realized that, nice. In all caps, I said, "This is amazing. Thank you!" Exclamation point! Exclamation point!
This is
point,
amazing!
Exclamation point.
No, OMG!
I really was like, "Oh my God, this is so cool." However, I did invoke the 3 exclamation point 3 paragraph rule because they did not send like an overly wordy email, just had a lot of information. Okay. So I wanted to convey that I was excited and cared about their email.
I would also like to thank listener Merlin for purchasing Why Are There Helicopters Over My House.com.
Oh, right. But it doesn't work for me.
It goes to the Back on Our Bullshit episode, which is probably our best episode.
You think so?
Nah.
I'm think terrible. It's no U-Haul lesbian moment.
I don't even know. I already, the minute I told you what I thought was a perfect album, I already regretted it. I already thought there's already 2 Silkworm albums I like better, let alone this is not a perfect album. I should not be allowed to pick things. That's what I think. I don't think I should be allowed to decide what's good.
I think people would enjoy our very second episode, A Reasonable Monster, in which we talk about... Oh, no, never mind. I thought we talked about just Steve Jobs' movie, but we talked about Steve Jobs' The Lost Interview, and Max just happened to be gone
wasn't
that
there.
Week.
Yeah. All right. Here's the situation, guys. Yeah. Now, you guys both got your iPhones.
No. I mean, I will have it on Friday.
Nobody has an iPhone, but I'm saying you got your pre-order.
Well, some YouTube youths do, but yes.
Right. And Merlin, you're waiting to see. You're going to wait and see. You're going to sit back and wait.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Here's the situation. I went to sleep and did not wake up to do the pre-order. And I got up first thing in the morning, my head comes off the pillow and I was like, uh-oh, I fucked up. I did not order my iPhone last night. So I immediately went on the app where I had already like prime. You know how you can go on the App Store app or the Apple Store app and you can like prime the pump? You can like have the order like ready to go. And I immediately woke up and I was just like, head off the pillow like, oh, fuck. Opened the app, went in, did my order. I was out in 10 seconds, you know. I didn't even bother with the AT&T bullshit. I'm just going to buy the phone outright. And it ships in – I will be lucky to have it by Christmas.
No, wow. You're going to have it mid-November.
Let's see if I open up the deliveries app.
Am I miscalculating how many weeks are in a month? 5 weeks. Yeah, no, you'll definitely have it before Christmas.
Hang on just a second. I'm going – and I'm scrolling, delivery. iPhone X, 256 GB, space gray, 47 days.
Wow.
47 days.
Oh,
delivered
I guess it is
December 18th. I am not waiting 48 days for this phone. So here's the deal. I'm going to get a boy.
Oh.
I got to get a boy.
Get a boy.
I'm going to get a boy. I'm going to get a boy to wait in line for me. And buy the phone.
When is that? Merlin, when does it become available?
Friday.
Friday. Get a boy.
So, Merlin, if you want this phone, the 256 GB space gray, I'll send it to you when it gets in. Otherwise, I'll just return it. How do I get a boy?
I think this is
very on brand for Due by Friday to get a line boy to help get the phone.
I totally agree.
For people who aren't subscribed to the after show, even though they should be, can we give a little bit of context for the boy?
Yeah.
What context? What do you want me to say? I want to pay someone to wait in line for me so I don't have to wake up at 3 in the morning and go to the Apple store.
Well, people don't know that that is a thing you can do.
Oh, yeah. It's a shitty thing that people do all the time.
I sent you a variety. Did I send you a variety of boys?
No,
that
you did not.
Although we were talking about a very handsome boy. You found a handsome boy who says he's good at waiting in line.
When we were discussing this the other day, Alex, you said to my assistant Renee, you were like, oh, you could just send Renee to go wait in line. And Renee was like, no, thank you. No, thanks.
Hmm. Well, you both replied with, oh, she's an administrative assistant, not a...
Renee's not like...
I would have
like,
rolled over like, okay.
Renee doesn't like pick up my dry cleaning for me.
Boy, this Matthew looks like a handsome guy that he's been tasking since
2016. And then in our Slack, Casey List was like, I would go wait in line for you.
Was
and
he,
I thought about
in?
It.
Was that a goof? It sounded like he really wanted to participate.
You know, the other thing I thought about was, maybe Casey in that moment was like, this could be funny. But then I was sort of like, I bet he's not actually sort of projecting forward into like waking up at 3 in the morning in the cold and standing outside the store and having
driving
to make small talk with the, with the weirdos.
Oh, I saw a white Tesla. It was pretty great. Anyway, here's what I'm nervous about for you, Max.
Well, what are you, when a 6-year-old boy? You're telling me a story about a car that you saw? What kind of a story is that, Alex?
No, that's not. The story is done. I said I saw a car and I liked it. Yes.
It was nice.
I saw a dump truck.
OMG! Oh my God! Thank you for your kind words.
At WWDC, I saw a Tesla Model 3 and I texted like everybody I knew.
You're
so
still
excited.
Telling me the story.
Why
is this
happening? You're making it worse.
You're making it worse. This is like when I meet some. It's like when I see Sandy's kids or whatever, and I'm like, "What's new? What's new, dude?" And he's like, "I saw a dump truck." I'm like, "That's not. I can't work with that."
This is me and animals. This morning we were 10 minutes late getting to school, but we still had to stop so I could take a photo of a cat. I was like, I got home, I showed my wife, I was like, look at the cat we found. We thought it was upstairs, we heard meow, meow, and then we thought it was upstairs, and we looked down, and look at it, it's white, and it's got a little black dot, and it wanted to come back in. And she's like, don't you have to go do anything right now?
Is that the whole story?
And the car had wheels. I think it had electrics. OMG.
It's a very Ralph Wiggum story to be like, I saw a car and the car turned around and looked at me.
I bit my Wookiee. Dig Dug, Max, I'm worried about what time, like, how do you assign your boy to have a, like,
so I don't know how this works. I've never, so I know that people do this on TaskRabbit. I am logged into TaskRabbit. I've never done a TaskRabbit. I have no idea how any of this works.
Matthew self-identifies as a line boy.
Where are you seeing line? What do I actually type in?
Scroll up. Don't
just
go all the way.
Line.
Wait in line.
Don't go all the way up
just,
to Richard Speck.
Line.
But you can go up and see Matthew in the
stop.
Thread.
I really don't want to get into that.
Can I ask you some questions about that? Night?
Okay, Alex. Where are you seeing? God, I don't understand this. It wants me to put an address in.
Yeah, you. So you would put
which
in,
one? Should I do the Lincoln Park or the Michigan Avenue?
You should
Apple
do
store?
Lincoln Park.
Why? Because Michigan Avenue will get more phones.
Mm. Michigan Avenue is also already has a line of people sleeping in
okay,
on the
so,
streets. So.
Wait, let me ask you this, Alex. Mm-hmm. Why don't I have them go out to Highland Park?
Oh, interesting.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Or what's the other one in the mall? Woodfield or
Oakbrook has one.
Yeah.
One.
Right.
The Acreville has one.
What about the Oakbrook Apple Store? Because what do they give? They're already wasting their whole day getting this phone for me. Why don't they? What do they care if they drive it up to me in Chicago?
That's actually I've gotten almost every phone from the Oakbrook Apple Store.
I've gone to Oakbrook too. That's when I got my Apple Pencil. I was like on a whim. I just called the Oakbrook store and I was like, I was like, do you guys have an Apple Pencil? And they were like, oh yeah, come on in. And I was like, really? You just have them?
Yeah, because only.
I guess that was the whole story. That
Alex
was the whole story.
I got a pencil. Matthew has 99% positive reviews out of 355 in the section called How I Can Help. He says, I am great at standing in line. We'll give updates as the line progresses to keep you updated on the situation.
Where I want that guy. Where do you see him?
He's a TaskRabbit. Is that what he is? Where'd you find this boy? Alex,
I think okay. So if you go on the website and it says need something different, you just type line and
so,
wait in line pops up.
So the
line?
Apple. So hang on. So the Oak. Okay. So the Apple Store is going to be 70 Oakbrook Center in Oakbrook, Illinois. compromising their OPSEC here. Unit or apartment? Okay. 70 Oak Brook Center. Should I get two boys to wait in two lines?
Yes, I think so.
I do.
That was
totally
what I was going to suggest.
Let me. How much is it?
$60 an hour.
No, that was the most expensive boy I could find.
So it caps like a good boy. At 60. Hang on, let me open up Solver. I need to do a little Solver math.
You say
here.
Solver, I say Solver.
Stop, that's embarrassing me.
Solver.
Don't say it like that. Solver.
Solver. I've got some Solver. It took me Lyft. Took me Lyft up. It's a tart to tart.
Sure. What time do you get in line for a phone?
I would say for this one, 4 a.m.
4 a.m. Okay, so six hours times $60 an hour is... What's wrong here? Oh, I see. $360. I mean, that's a lot of money, but not
it's
objectively...
It's for the show. Do it for the show.
Well, can I expense it to the to the Patreon
budget?
Well,
it's becoming apparent to me that I need to start getting more recoupable costs on this show.
Yes, you can. Yeah. You can expense the pizzas.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, for sure you can. You certainly can expense the pizzas.
Alrighty.
I'm not going to expense this. But here's the thing is like, I would never do this for $360.
Mm-mm.
But it seems like a good value of like buying someone's labor, but it still feels ridiculous to spend that much money.
Well, if I'm trying to think about how much an hour, like theoretically how much you would be paid an hour, and this is if you think of it like that, it's definitely a good pretend that your phone is broken and that you need it, mm-hmm. and trick yourself into thinking that this is a very good idea.
Just commit. You got to commit.
So tell us what you need done, plus any requirements or questions you may have. You can edit this later. Wait in line for an iPhone X at the Oak Brook Apple Store. Ideally, I would like a 256 GB space gray phone, but... really, I would take any model. I don't. I mean, what's the smallest one? Is what 128?
No, like 32.
No, they're not doing a fucking 32. No, they're not. iPhone
X 64.
Okay, I can't work. I can't work with a 64 gigabyte phone. Okay. All right. So I really would need a. What are the different options?
Space gray or silver.
Yeah, but
with
size,
the GBs.
I don't really care what color it is. Space gray clearly looks better, but
I heard the silver looks nice.
256 GBs. It's too shiny.
Yeah. That's my Series 3 is my first shiny I've bought in a long time.
Okay. Ooh.
I'm just trying to understand
Is it grippy?
Oh, I haven't touched it.
That's the problem.
Assume.
Is I think if it's space gray, I mean it's not going to be like the piano black. Isn't it going to be kind of slidey soapy? iPhone 6 feel?
Oh, God. Well, they both have the same glass back.
Oh, my God.
Right.
The only size options are 64 gigabytes or 256.
Yes, yeah. That is right.
There's no other, there's nothing in between.
That's correct.
Yes.
So it's a phone with not enough memory to really do what you need, or a phone with
way
too much memory
you
that you're
That's
paying
right.
an insane margin on.
That's right.
The youths are going to get the rich youths are going to get the 64, and all of the nerds are going to get the 256.
Oh, my God. Okay. So I don't have any flexibility on the size. It has to be the 256.
Correct.
Okay. So I'm going to tell the tax rabbit. So I'm going to say I need a 256 GB model, but either color is fine if the space gray is sold out.
Mm-hmm.
Merlin, he's getting the girl phone.
256. What, the silver?
It's so shiny.
It's not white. I mean, it's not embarrassing.
I love those white iPhones. I thought they were beautiful.
That's problematic.
God, that
is
see,
really
I'm very, I'm very confident in my masculinity, and I can hold a white phone.
You really shouldn't be.
As long as I don't run into any teenagers who might laugh at me, I love a white phone.
Nice phone. Do they make it for men?
$1,000 on a girl phone.
Do they make it for men?
Stop! Don't laugh at me.
You're making it worse.
It's upsetting.
Oh, Max did not want the. If you remember, I gave you both the hair removal cream called NADS.
I got rid of it. I'm not going to put that on my balls. I'm not going to put that anywhere in my body, to be quite honest.
I used it on some parts of my body. It was wise to not to not use
Aha!
it.
Task date. Hang on now. Task date and time. I need Friday, November 3rd. Oh. You can't even get someone before 8 a.m.
I think if you message them, you like we used TaskRabbit a lot when we were like setting up the office and we needed people to go pick up like big TVs because we had no cars to do so. And they basically were like, they called and were like, OK, what do you actually need? Because the app isn't
so
flexible.
So I could get Kevin and he says how I can help. I'm really patient. I have no problem waiting in line. And he has one completed waiting in line task.
Oh, wow. One? Hmm. The boys I were looking at had like
Well, they're
hundreds.
Probably all the good boys are probably gone.
Yeah. I think good all the good boys are in
oh,
Chicago.
Oh, I see. They're sorted by I could get Demetrius and he's done 5 with 100% positive reviews and he says I don't get tired.
Can you look specifically search specifically like
these are
for
cheaper
iPhones?
Than $60 an hour, by the way. These are $20 an hour.
Oh, these are the suburb boys.
Mm-hmm. Your so boy, should I go back boy had a really good haircut.
Should I change the thing to the Linkin Park store?
I think you'll have better luck there.
Okay, fine. You think I'm going to get a higher caliber of boy?
Yeah. I think you're going to get a higher caliber of boy and
a
you're
city
gonna...
boy. I don't want a country boy.
Alex's boy has completed 465 tasks.
Mm-hmm.
Alex, yesterday. Yes. On,
wouldn't it be great if all the Cards Against Humanity people had that on their bio? How many tasks they've completed at Cards Against Humanity?
Alex, just for what it's worth, yesterday on Dan's Back to Work program, I used NADS live on air.
Whoa, no. Wah,
And it smelled like a fish's ass.
My bathroom still smells like it.
It smells
I don't know what to do.
So bad.
It's like the Seinfeld car smell. It just yes. followed me throughout
it is,
the
it's
day.
Like, it is like, but like, it, no. Here's the thing. When I say a fish's ass, I know a fish doesn't have an ass. Just telling you, it smells like a
it
fish.
Has an anus.
Saying it smells like a fish does not give you a sense of how much butt it has in it. And when I say it smells like butt, you're not really fully getting how much fish is in it. I put about a nickel-sized amount on my forearm, and I had to stop the program and go wash myself. It was so nasty.
An entire leg, Merlin. An entire leg.
Well, see, you can opt out of that. You don't have to do that.
I don't know.
You don't
like
have to do that. Just
things.
Go natural, man. Just go let it all hang out,
no,
man.
No, no. Well,
you can comb it.
I guess you've never had this experience, but if you have shaved your legs and then you let it grow, mm-hmm. you can feel it like in your pants,
no, that's
and it's
a myth.
Very uncomfortable.
That's a myth.
No, it is not. Mm. It is not. There have been, it is, wait, really? Really? I'm so upset. No, well, I have the girl, the like, not the skinny jeans, but the ones that have to, you know, touch your calves.
Oh, the peg legs. Mm-hmm. How's it going, Max? How's your, did you find a boy?
All right, so I'm going with Demetrius.
Excellent.
And mm-hmm. he has four, he's the most experienced line waiter. He has waited in 4 lines and he has 100% positive reviews. Now, my concern is that I cannot make this task start earlier than 8 a.m., and that is definitely not early enough to get an iPhone X.
I have an idea.
Go on.
Can I tell you my idea?
Please.
Hire Demetrius to
yes.
go and wait online as a test task. Have him go and buy you something you want or need from an Apple store showing up at 8 a.m. If it goes well, say, thank you, Demetrius. I would like to give you 5 stars and a full-size candy bar. And I would like to talk to you a little bit about what flexibility you got on start time. So if it goes well and you know Demetrius is as patient as he claims to be, you now have a boy.
This is getting really expensive and time-consuming
for
me.
That's right. That's
and
right.
I mean, we're recording this on Wednesday. I only have 48 hours.
Hmm. I say pull the trigger now. This is, I mean, you have to be in the studio for at least another
Should I post on Craigslist?
No.
That's
no
what Nathan
should,
For You does.
No wow. one should use
Did either of you
Craigslist.
Watch any of the Nathan For You videos that I sent you?
I did.
I'm about to be so mad.
No, it was very good.
He's
got it all
he's
queued
funny.
Up in my okay. Instapaper.
It's a little on the nose, but the way he carries himself is very, very funny.
Okay.
All right. I watched the poop yogurt one.
I'm very worried that Instapaper is never going to be updated for the iPhone X, and I'm going to have to switch to that other one. This is what I think about my scary
here's
movies.
The thing. I know I will
helps.
Capitulate and I will adapt, and everything about this thing that looks like stupid and annoying to me will eventually seem like common sense, but like there's so much about this phone that really feels like I don't know if I'm ready for that yet. I really like my button. I know. As soon as I pick it up, it's going to be like, whatever, cool. This is not a feature. This is just a thing now. But like, I'm going to wait and see. I'm going to hang back.
Okay. All right. I think I've hired my guy, and hopefully this is not a fiasco. I don't know, man. I feel very uncertain about this. Let me go back to Solver and just hang on.
You've got
to
go earlier, dude.
It's only going to cost me. It's going to cost me like $180.
Offer be like, hey, can you text me? And then be like, all right, here's the deal. I need you to get here at 4 a.m. And also, I will pay you in cash.
Oh, shit.
You will pay the extra hours in cash because you can't do it in the app.
Shit, Alex.
Yeah. Tax-free line money.
Yes. Yes. This is very smart. Okay.
Okay.
All right. What do we do next? I already forgot what podcast this is.
Is anyone still listening?
Oh, I'm very apprehensive about this whole procedure.
Do you guys want an update on what Tiff's eating?
Yes, please.
Oh, I would love to know what Tiff's eating.
Well, Tiff's enjoying the program this week. She's having autonomous field green medley with bilateral heritage game fennel and Pinewood smoked heart of mallow charcuterie. That's served over unbasted limoncello fontanelle en croûte, penetrated with little pink sword picks, dusted with poppy blush reduction, and sliced diagonally. Just having a light lunch.
It sounds more Hannibal Lecter every week you do it.
That's the idea.
I knew I was going to eat the salad a day before I ate it.
I've learned a great deal of my techniques from Tiff Arment. From watching her videos and the way that she makes such a lovely meal in costumes for her child, they admire me and enjoy talking to me.
Oh, I always know when I'm going to eat before I'm going to eat.
Now, what are you nervous about, Max? Are you nervous about your boy?
Well,
you got to really get in there. Here's the thing. I don't like
you know, I always fuck this up, and I never have the phone when everyone gets a phone. I just want to join in on the fun and have a phone on the. It's fun. I just don't. I want
to
get
the
early phone.
Here's the thing. You need to fucking commit to this. You need to set aside the idea that this is costly. Okay? You need to stop feeling bad about this. If you're going to buy this douche phone on the day it comes out, be prepared to pay for it and go all in. You need to get offline with Dimitri. You need to cross his fucking palm. And you need to tell him, here's what I need from you, because otherwise it's going to be a
cost. What is that, a British thing? What does that mean?
What just happened?
What?
What is that? What did you just say?
Cross his palm?
You need to give him some pounds sterling. You need to give him some shekels. You know what I'm saying? You need to get in the lift and pull the lorry.
What is that, a couple quid?
I think it's a tuppence a day. And so my only point being, Max, like, this is the problem. This is like they say on The Good Place. That's the problem with human beings. Is that they will take something amazing and ruin it so they can have more of it. Don't do that. Don't be that guy. Don't be frozen yogurt guy here. Go all in with him and say, look, I'm going to make this worth your while. But like him being there at 8 is not going to be necessarily a good thing. You may be spending a lot of money to not get a phone or I don't know. I think you need to go
all
in. Well,
I will cancel the job if he can't go early. Like okay. I'm just so does that make sense? So I've
hired
him.
Do you want to call him or text him right now?
No, I don't have a way to do that. It'll TaskRabbit will.
I bet you TaskRabbit, given that their only value is as a finder, I bet there is a severe admonishment to not make offline deals with people.
I've done that. Ooh. So I think it's like, well, it was more of like, hey, can you do this earlier and I'll give you.
That's
a
what
cash
I did with
tip.
My TV. When I got my TV delivered, I'd asked the people, like, hey, like an idiot, I'd said to my customer service person, can I pay this person money to carry it up for me? And they're like, no, that would require a separate bill of lading and make it up. And then the guy shows up. I'm like, hey, you take $40 to carry my TV? He's like, shit, dog. Yeah. I'm not made of fucking stone. We talked about the weather. Gave him some candy.
Aww.
You like candy? What about you, Miles Davis?
Oh, boy.
Maybe somebody wants some candy for me? Just give me a speck. Give me a speck of candy.
Here's an interesting thing about the music. So my band that I chose, Cloud Cult, that band is nothing but hooks. It's just hooks in the sense of like things to be interested in every song. Like it's just a weird fucking band and everything is weird and interesting. And it's this crazy circus of things vying for your attention. And you're just like, wait, what? And you just want to follow everything happening in the band. It's even crazier if you ever see them live. I'll get into this whole thing.
It's very economical. It's got like huge hooks. They get in, they get out. They're lush, but like economical. I really liked it.
But here's the thing with Silkworm.
Yeah.
No hook. There was nothing there for me to grab onto. I was just listening to a sort of pavement-y sound, you know, sort of post-rocky. I mean, I thought there was like good sound songwriting. I mean, it just now.
You don't think Couldn't You Wait is a little hooky?
I thought it was fine. I don't mean a hook in that the song didn't have a hook. Right. I mean, a hook is not the right word to use because it has a
music
meaning.
They're very angry and austere. They're very Steve Albini. Steve Albini has never been more appropriate for a band.
Steve Albini produce this album?
All their albums, yeah.
That makes a lot of sense to me. Okay, so I just struggle. I mean, please keep in mind, like, I haven't sat with this album. I listened to it once.
This is problematic. You can't give somebody an album that requires 10 listenings and, like, have listened to it once.
I'm a busy guy.
You would not believe how I glossed over you guys. Woohoo! You have no idea.
Yeah.
It was 35 minutes.
So I'll say I listened to the whole album of Libertine, but at the end I was left with, like, it kind of felt like one long song, and I was like, we talked about how much we love Slint, right? Mm-hmm. And Slint is an album that I think if you hear that for the first time, you're just like, there's just nothing here. It just sounds like glum, jangly guitar. But if you listen to it 10 times, it opens up in this really satisfying way. And I would imagine Silkworm is probably the same way.
So many bands like that where just over time, the repetition, you start to feel these waves of, like, for me, we'll get to this when we talk about our criteria. For me, sequencing is a big one. And the feeling that, like, each song mostly works as a song, but also that it's telling this bigger story. And this is why I had When I Pretend to Fall on my list, because I think that's a masterful sequence. That would be a very good album in another order, but the order the songs are in on When I Pretend to Fall makes it a classic album unimpeachably. And you can't pick that up on one listen, right? I mean, that's me and Kanye. We're like going and listening to these Kanye songs one at a time, and I loved Monster for years. I like Lights. I like all, but listening to them in order, it's like it just blooms as this thing, and you don't get that on the first three listens.
Well, I agree. I guess I agree with you on the order, but Kanye is an artist who, the first time I heard Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, from the first 10 seconds of the first song, I was like, I am in. Like, this is just in my brain.
Really,
it's got its little
really good
tendrils in my brain. But, I mean, to me, one of the characteristics of a great album is the first time you hear it, like, immediately you turn, you know, the thing flickers on and there's, like, something for you to grab onto. And you're like, I love this beat. I love this groove. There's something there that I can, like, sink my teeth into right away. And then on the 20th listen, you're like, holy shit, I get this in a new way that I didn't before. And Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy does that. I think Radiohead does that for a lot of their work. Like, there's something there the first time. But boy, the dozenth time you listen to Kid A, you're like, this is...
Well, you know, listening to your album, Max, also, the comparison game is so dumb, but I immediately thought of Montreal. I don't know if you ever got into them, but like a similar kind of thing where the one with the connected dots and...
I saw them live at Pitchfork and with their fucking three-ring circus live show.
Yeah. And, but that's true of a lot of those of the Elephant Six bands, but like with Of Montreal in particular, you listen to it the first time, you're like, wow, these are really good pop songs. But then, especially the one, there's that one really, the really sad tomato one that's kind of about his breakup. That's just like, you get to the middle part of that album when you're listening for the third time, and it's crushing in a way that it wasn't on the first time. Because you've heard the progression, you know the story now, it actually becomes more moving. But at the same time, you hear, like, you know, Suffer for Fashion and go, like, this is an unimpeachably great pop song.
I kind of, it kind of felt like not a rock opera. I don't know how to describe it. Like, I still don't know if I'd like this album, but
which one?
I just...
Was this Happy Hippopotamus?
No,
you're talking about
Silkworm.
Silkworm.
Yeah.
You are under no obligation to like this album. It's totally, nobody likes this band like I like this band. And that's one reason I picked it.
Merlin, here's the thing. Here's what I thought maybe you were doing. I thought maybe I was on to your little game here where you picked one of these like shibboleth bands that music people like.
Yeah.
Where it's like, if you're cool, you pretend to like this band. And so I was like, maybe Merlin set us up. He's trying to cuck us. So we get on the podcast and we're like, this band was boring and sounded like, you know, 90s Steve Albini music.
Right.
And it's one long song that there was no point of access for me into. But then we're going to sound like idiots because we're trashing. We're like, yeah, what Nirvana? What is that? They just start with the chorus, huh? What was that? Their little gimmick?
Right.
You know, but we sound like idiots to everyone in the outside world. So I asked, I was playing video games with our friend Paul Saborin, friend of the show, Paul Saborin. And I was like, hey, Paul, you know this band Silkworm? Are they like, are they a band that like cool music people know? And he's like, Silk who?
Yeah. Well, okay, here's
so I don't think it's that. So I don't think it's that.
It's, well, okay,
Dave,
but here's,
what?
And this is why I think the criteria are more interesting than the content, because the criteria cannot even fully be articulated to me. And I'll give you another example. So I was tempted to pick an album by Badfinger, Badfinger liked the move, and like a lot of like 60s pop bands, they don't have like what I would consider a perfect album. The Move in particular are all about the singles. Their albums are good, but they're all, you know, like The Who, a lot of the bands in the mid 60s, the power came out of their succession of incredible singles. So, I mean, same thing with Badfinger. So, you know, Baby Blue, you know all the classic Badfinger songs. But the thing is, right, what you may not know unless you're a dork is what the band was going through at each of those stages. So sometimes, in the same way that, like, even it's like a Rocky story where, like, no, Rocky didn't win, but he kind of won. And that's when you're listening to it and you know this band, they put out an album and it did so shitty and it was so hard and it turned out like pretty good. And then it got worse. And they put out an album after that. And that album was even better under more horrible conditions. And there's this part of me that's like, I'm pulling for these bands because I know just a little bit about their bio. Does not come through in the music. Impossible. And so in this case with Silkworm, this is a pivotal album for them because it's between like this, oh, we're these four dorks who don't wear shirts, you know, in Montana, to like the guy who is kind of the star of the band leaves right after this album and they become a three piece for the rest of their career. I can't articulate that in what goes into this, but I can feel the tension. I can feel the anger. I can feel them yelling at each other with their instruments in a way that like I find very moving. So no, I mean, I was not trying to be like a hipster outsider. It's just that this is one of those bands that has a really special place for me. They got a lot of play when I lived in Tallahassee, and I became very familiar with them. Other guys in my band became friends with Tim and some of the guys in Silkworm. And like, I have this connection to them that's part of what makes the criteria so slippery. Because what we fought about that people don't see here, what we fought about is, look, what do we agree? There's one we all agreed on. Nobody's allowed to pick In the Airplane Over the Sea. That would be so fucking lame because everybody agrees that's a really good album. So that's why, anyway, I don't mean to sound defensive. I meant more to say, like, I think the criteria for what you consider, it's like, you know, if everybody always, like you said, Max, if everybody always says Pet Sounds, like, we don't get anywhere. We don't get anywhere if we go, oh, yeah, here's this, oh, yeah, you know what? You should check out OK Computer. It's a really good album by Radiohead.
I appreciated listening to this. This sounds like what it sounds like if I was 10 years older than I am now, I would have heard this. I would have smoked a clove cigarette at the Black Cat in DC while I was waiting for Pavement to start their set.
Yeah. Well,
I would have talked over this band.
I could see that. Mm-hmm. And that's probably how they felt too. I mean, they had a lot of like, there's nobody here tonight experiences, but yeah, it's hard. It is really hard. And it really gets to this deeper thing with me of like, I've said this to you guys before, like one reason I feel like I'll sometimes be on the podcast The Incomparable, and that is pretty consistently what I know to be my worst performances on a podcast or anytime I have to be in a group of people talking about media, because I am utterly ill suited. There's so many things I feel like I can talk about with some level of sanity.
Merlin, when do you listen to this album in your life today? When is like, this is the time, this is the moment that I should listen to Libertine?
I don't listen to that much music day to day like I used to right now, but it would be something I would just put on repeat when I was writing or just doing stuff.
So you have a level of like, I love when I get to that level of familiarity with an album where I can put it on and I don't even really process the lyrics in a way that interferes with my like ability to write, for example, because it's like...
Everybody needs music like that, where even if it's some people can't write with lyrics on, but yeah, you're right. I mean, for me, that's REM or the Wrens. It's something where like, this is so deep in my DNA that like, you know, I know it inside out.
And then sometimes those albums for you, the ones you really connect with, they like cultivate like a kind of a mood in you that you can get with writing. So like, this is my, you know, like I definitely have my albums of like, this is my like chill out albums. And this is my like high energy albums. If I'm trying to get a certain vibe in my writing, I can put that on and I'm not even sort of intellectually processing the music that's happening. I'm just sort of
slip into a mode really quickly because everybody, I'm sure, I hope you guys all have albums where you're like, as soon as you hear, so if I put on Either Or, which has a very special place in my life, and I hear doon 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 doon, I am instantly transported to a very complicated time in my life, and it gives me very complicated feelings. I hope everybody has albums like that. It's not always a happy feeling. It's not always a good feeling. Some of the best albums, when you put them on, are like, oh God, it's this ride. And like, and by the end, you're so excited, and he sings Say Yes, and it's a wonderful, happy ending for the first time to an Elliott Smith album. But you know what I'm saying? Everybody's got those albums where you put it on, you're instantly, like, emotionally transported in a way that feels nearly physical.
Yeah, that, I realized that was, like, kind of the main thing for my requirements. I sent you the list, and one that I put on that initially was a goof, but it's not really a goof, is that it made me laugh and cry. And every album that was... I was looking at, like, they like, yeah, Pet Sounds is great, but I have no emotion listening to that album anymore. Like, mm-hmm. when I first heard it, it was from, like, soundtracks to 90s movies. It wasn't something that was independent.
This also kind of started with a goof about Max hating the Ramones, and I was talking about, like...
Wait a minute. I hate Blitzkrieg Bop.
Oh, in particular.
Because I think it's a song that is...
It's now a Mona Lisa song. You cannot watch CNN without hearing Blitzkrieg Bop in three different promotions.
I have no context for... I was not, like, alive for a time when Blitzkrieg Bop was, like... a cool rockin' song. Like, it was always a song that was selling me a Hyundai.
Or Anthony Bourdain.
Right.
Oh, it's so frustrating to me. That's so mad.
And you know, it's ultimate sort of soft suburban dad wearing a V-neck sweaterification was, like, being the, like, closing cool song of the Marvel Spider-Man Homecoming movie.
Like buying a Ramones t-shirt for your baby. It's like,
I don't hate the Ramones. It's like they're a fun band. I just, that particular song, like, I think it's really lame now because of cultural context reasons.
Yeah.
Hey, you know the mural, the Elliott Smith mural on Figure Eight?
Yes.
That's Ben from Cards. That's his coffee shop, Dinosaur Coffee.
Huh. Oh, wow.
No kidding. I think Autumn DeWild did that. She's very talented.
The mural got partially, like, destroyed this year, but not by Ben, by their landlord.
There's so many records I should have chosen instead of this. I don't know what I put it on and I got the feelings, and, like, I was like, this is the one.
Dinosaur Coffee in Silver Lake. Everyone should go to that. Thank you to our sponsor, Dinosaur Coffee.
Tick-a-tick-a.
No, now I'm just having all of those feelings, like, looking at my list of songs and, or not songs, albums. When I put on Silkworm, it immediately sounded like Jawbreaker to me. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wait, what's happening? And it sounds like pre-emo. It's not, like, to me, I was like, this isn't post-rock, pre-emo. That's not a real thing. It is a thing I made up because that's what it sounded like to me.
No, I know what you mean. But, like, it's got that feeling of, like, it's very emotional. It's very challenging from, like, a instrumentation standpoint. Like, it's real, real crunchy. And kind of, like, and very emotional. Like, it's in this case, I think, very angry.
Well,
I'm
curious. Let me ask you about that. Okay.
Let's talk about your album. Stop talking about my album.
We'll get to it in 1 second. This is my last question. So I think objectively, if you listen to that album, it does not sound emotional. It sounds kind of emotionless.
What?
Sounds kind of
You're so
flat.
High. Those three Joel R.L. Phelps songs on side one. Oh,
I think
you've
it's
gotta
a, but
be
but I but okay but listen so how do I I'm not, this is a hard point to get across. So, like, sonically, I think it sounds kind of, I think if you're, like, an alien and you evaluated the album, it sounds kind of flat to me.
Yeah.
But I think like, clearly when you listen to it, you do get a feeling of that it is that kind of emotion, but it's like a kind of a muted 90s anger. I don't know. Do you understand what I'm saying? Of, like,
it's not, you're not really engaged with that emotion. You're just kind of performing the emotion.
It's like, I feel it when I hear it. I can feel, like you said, like, I feel that there's this tension and this anger and this emotion in the music, mm-hmm. but I don't think it's, like, sonically there. There's no one yelling.
One guy with the really high voice, Joel R.L. Phelps, who after this went off to start the Downer Trio, which is another amazing band. His songs are very, it's his songs in particular, like, he was the weirdo in the band. He was probably, I think, somewhat inarguably the most talented songwriter coming from Einheit into Silkworm. He was, like, he was the baller. And everybody in the band kind of, like, learned a lot from him. Tim Midge has talked a lot about how much he's learned from him. But, like, he was also a very, very difficult character. When you'd go and see them live, he was doing a Robert Fripp. He would just stand with his back to the audience. He was a very weird guy.
That's so cool.
That's such an asshole. But
I saw TV on the Radio, the main guitarist, what He was like, had a cigarette like dangling out of his lips, like it was about to fall onto the stage, and just turned his back to the audience and fucking crush it. Very cool.
But you can hear, like, there's some parts where, like, it is, and also the other part, Alex, that's very emo-y. And I think we all agreed where I wasn't allowed to pick a certain Pixies album. But the Loud, Quiet, Loud stuff is sort of proto-emo, right? When you hear a band that does the Loud, Quiet, Loud stuff, or with, like, big silences in the middle of it. And sometimes there will be these things where Joel will do this, scream, and then Tim Midget goes, bump, with this like fucking angry, like fuck you, distorted bass note to respond to his yelling. And I don't know if that's intentional, but I feel that tension when I'm listening to it. And I think there's a difference between sad and rage, sadness and rage and anger. I think anger is different, right? Like a lot of people who think they sound angry mainly sound like they're having rage. Anger is more like roiling, like fuck kind of feeling. Which differentiates it from some punk rock, which is merely just like, you know, adolescent sad rage.
All right.
If you could encapsulate adolescent sad rage into a sound, like I think of like meh. It's like that's how most of them.
If there was a thought, if there was like a balloon for your music, it would just be like meh.
Meh.
It's like grumpy cat.
Did anybody
I hate Mondays.
Did anybody consider Sunny Day Real Estate at all? Was that ever on your
list? Yes. I actually thought that Diary would be considered. We would all agree on it.
I really like that album
a lot. What album?
Diary, Sunny Day Real Estate.
What is this?
Probably.
The band is called Diary?
One of the best emo albums ever.
I don't know them at all.
Oh,
right.
Oh
really?
My God. Okay.
All right.
So good.
I would like your thoughts on Advice to Nappy Hippopotamus, and then I'll tell you a little bit of the story of the band and the album, and then see. I'm curious what you guys made of it.
I love this album, and I know most of the story.
Did you already know it?
Yes.
Of course. We have the same taste in music.
Okay. It is not my favorite Cloud Cult's album, so I'm interested as to why you picked it. But yeah, I don't really have anything to say. I think this is one of their best. I think it's a bit long. It seems a little bit self-indulgent.
A bit long. It's like 40 tracks.
Most of their albums are pretty long.
Yeah,
but
that's true.
It felt a little self-indulgent in some places. But yeah, I don't really have anything to say. Like you put it on, you listen through the entire thing, and especially knowing like the backstory of the band and of the guy, like it's another thing of where context feels like it's very important to listening to it. So I don't know how I feel about that when like picking a perfect album. Like for me, also with my album, like Celebration Rock, both I think it stands alone without the context of what was happening. But I don't know if somebody, I don't know if I gave Cloud Cult's, this album particularly, to somebody, if they'd be like, wow, this is absolutely beautiful and wonderful.
Well, Merlin had never heard of them before. So what did you make of it?
So with both of your bands, I had no familiarity. I knew the name Japan Droids, but I'd never heard them. I'd never heard of your band, Max. But in both instances, they passed a basic bar, which was I found them both listenable, more than listenable. You know, the lowest bar is like, can I roll with this? And I instantly was able to roll with both. But also that I really also instantly was like, what's going on with these guys? You know, again, sort of like with Of Montreal or Neutral Milk Hotel or Apples and Stereo or any of those. You're like, what is their fucking deal? Like, how did they end up sounding like this? This is super interesting. So no, I don't know any of the backstory. And I have avoided doing a deep dive, a Wikipedia dive on either, because I wanted to wait. But now I do have questions. But no, I found it, yours, Max, I only listened to it once, but I found it very enjoyable. They do that thing I love where they got intro parts and there's no rap sketches or anything like that.
Guy coughing from weed smoke
fucking,
in the middle of the
fucking,
set.
Fucking,
I keep feeding him and feeding him. All right.
I hate rap sketches. I hate them so much.
I kind of love them, but not
like
on the
Wu-Tang,
40th time.
But like, the
not
Wu-Tang
on the 40th
are...
time through no. of 36 Chambers. I don't really need to hear it. Oh my God. Or the worst one is when the Biggie rap sketches come on shuffle in my car and there's just like, just like some loud, like I'm like driving a congressman to an event and there's just like some sort of crazy like blowjob sketch comes on the stereo. Yay. On shuffle. It's like, oh, that's a rap sketch.
And then quickly, right. just quickly to get this out, Alex, I love yours. I will be listening to this band again. I'm very curious. Is it just two people in the band?
Yes.
Oh man, I loved it. It was catchy as fuck. And I the songs were propulsive, and I really enjoyed it.
Okay. Here's the deal with Cloud Cult. It is a indie band. Merlin, you totally nailed it. It's like in that same. They're not Elephant Six or anything, but they're. You can definitely hear that. Very, like, that's their inspiration.
I would say, like, you know what, you don't want to say Baroque pop, but like definitely in that, like, it, you could tell there's some strings and stuff and a lot of instrumentation and big sound
totally.
Coming out. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was what I was listening to at the time when I found them. And I was like, holy shit, this is awesome. I think they're also kind of hippies. And so there's a little bit of that kind of crunchy, you know, funk kind of stuff happening. And
wait,
that,
I need to get this out of the way. Have you seen them live?
Me?
Yes.
Like many, many, many times.
How do you feel about the goggles?
The goggles.
Mm. He has like his steampunk
goggles.
Oh,
I can talk about that. I mean, the guy.
No.
Well, I'll get to that in a second. But,
oh, no.
But okay. Mm. It's not. Well, at least when I've seen him live, it's not. He has more goggles. He wears a Mardi Gras mask, but he has stage
I've seen
fright.
That too.
He has stage fright, so he wears like a.
Yeah,
he wears
sure
like
picked a good business.
Well, yeah, I guess. So, basically. And then their other big inspiration is
My God, they kind of look like if Pepsi wanted to do an ad campaign and they couldn't get Broken Social Scene, they're like, get something a little bit more younger in Scooby Doo. They're really cute. No, they're adorable.
Boards of Canada. Their other main influence is Boards of Canada. So they're very direct. Their earlier stuff, even earlier than this, sounds way more like Boards of Canada than it does Elephant Six. And this is kind of a transitional album where they actually start doing some more, like you said, like more like orchestral, like. Kind of songwriting. So basically, it's this, the Craig Minowa is the front man, the guy who wears the Mardi Gras mask, and he's a singer-songwriter and kind of creative director for the band. As far as I know, I think he writes almost all the songs, but then other people kind of do their own instrumentation. And this album was written about his son that died right before he recorded the album.
Oh,
so basically,
God, no.
Yeah, so his son was maybe one or two or something like that and died, and his wife left him, and I think he had like a chronic back injury or something. And he lived on a farm. He's like an organic farmer, and I think he now also does like, or maybe also then he did like soundtracks for nature documentaries and stuff like that. And he built like a solar powered recording studio, and the reason no one's ever heard of them is they're a completely independent band. They've never been on a label because they want to have all of their merchandise and their CDs and stuff be 100% renewable, and no labels will do that. So they just sell and distribute all their own merch. Like for that reason, there's never been a Cloud Cult album released on vinyl, which is kind of interesting because there's no way to do sustainable vinyl, I guess.
Wow.
But they just do everything themselves. Like I got a Cloud Cult t-shirt like from the bassist at the first show I saw of theirs in high school. Like, you know, they're kind of one of those bands, and they tour around in their own biodiesel van. Like they're just like,
it's so cool.
That's really cool.
They're just
actually.
Like, yeah, so the people among people who know about them, it used to be the secret club, and I would say I think they're out there now. Like I'm always surprised when I post some Cloud Cult thing how many people like, you know, fave it, or they're like, oh, I love this band. So I guess they're kind of getting out there a little bit, but I always felt like it was always my personal mission to make people hear about Cloud Cult. Now, as to the art direction, this is one of my least favorite album covers of all time, the art on this album. And I have to say that really, it's really atrocious and embarrassing. And I actually, so after the Obama campaign in 2008, I had left school to work on the Obama. I dropped out of college or took a leave of absence from college to work on the Obama campaign. And after the campaign ended, there was some time before I could like go back to school before it's, you know, the semester restarted or whatever.
Is that his child?
Yes.
A drawing of his child or whatever. So there was some time where after the campaign, I didn't know what to do with my life, and I was kind of drifting through life, and I was, you know, I don't know, how old are you? I was like 19 or 20 and like just had nothing to do with my time. And so I emailed at one point Cloud Cult, and I was like, I just was working on the Obama campaign and did identity and design for the Obama campaign. Could I like fix the identity for your band and like make you a better like logo and album art system and help figure this out? And I think they wrote me a polite email, but they were like, we don't want any help with that. And but anyway,
thanks for the kind words.
And then I've since decided
message.
Thank you for your message. Yeah, I'm sure I wrote a really arrogant email to them too. I haven't gone back to look at it, but I'm sure it was really arrogant. Oh, and like, yeah, you know, you guys suck and I'm great and can I fix your band for you,
Obama.
And I'm sure I was very full of myself.
Oh,
but
thanks, Obama.
But I've since then, I've never emailed them or corresponded with them or talked to Craig or had any. I just don't want to fuck that up. Like, I'm very happy with the relationship I have with this band as it is. But anyhow, I agree with you. Their visual design and their costuming, and they went through a whole steampunk phase, and it's all very embarrassing. But anyway, that being said, I fucking love this music. I think it's incredibly eclectic. I think he deals, his music is not, this is their most depressing album for sure.
So how do you feel about They Live on the Sun then? Because that was immediately after
his
kid died.
That's not a good album though.
But
it doesn't work. There's almost no good songs on that album.
Really?
Yeah, it's just not good. Oh, it's not a good album. It's not good. It sounds like it's just not good. They have a lot of they do a lot of like nursery rhyme songs and stuff on that. I just do not like it. I mean, I think it's interesting, and maybe I would have liked it at the time if it was my first Cloud Cult album, because it's like you can clearly hear this band. They also, that song, that album has like 50 songs on it, and they're just trying everything and trying to figure out what they are, who they are as a band and what their sound is and what they're about. To me, Happy Hippopotamus, it keeps some of the experimentation, the novelty, but they have, as a members of the band, like they have like a cellist and a violinist, and there's also two painters who are members of the band, and when they tour, they paint with this music on stage.
I've heard of this.
And at the end of the concert, they auction the paintings off, and the money is given to like environmental charities and helps pay for the band's tours and stuff. But I've never won a painting. I always bid on them, and I've never won one. Let's see, what else do I want to say about them? They're one of the most fun live bands I've ever seen live, and I think even if you have almost zero familiarity with their music, you'll go to this concert and the painting and their fucking light show is amazing, and their choreography is great, and they like always have some fun gimmick of like all of a sudden in the middle of a song all the band members will like pull out baking sheets and do like a rhythm breakdown where they all like bang on baking sheets and dance around the stage. Like, it's just such a fun, their music is so sad and melancholy and so life affirming and such a celebration of like the human condition. It's very beautiful to me. I've been listening to it forever. Like, I found this album when I was like 17, which is like that's like your sweet spot where these things get into your brain. And they're, what's also fun is they put out an album almost every 2 years. They, like clockwork, have a new album out, and their progression as like recording artists is unbelievable. Like, their stuff is so beautiful and polished and wonderful now. But I have a soft spot in my heart for the raw madness, just the total fucking craziness of this album, and those really abrasive synths and the funk drums, and it's just the whole three-ring circus of the band is very fun to me in this album.
The first album I heard was Light Chasers, which came out in 2010, and that was like, I don't know, it was when I was like, it was my post-emo phase where I was slowly getting to bands that were good. And how do you like their new, I don't know, their new stuff seems so much more polished. Like, I eventually went back and listened to They Live on the Sun, and I was like, oh, wow, this is a different band.
I think it's way better. So, like, if you're listening to this and you want to check out Cloud Cult, I strongly urge you to... I would say, and Veronica's also a huge fan, and we talked about this a little bit, I think our favorite Cloud Cult album is probably The Meaning of Eight, which is the album that came after that. I think that's, or Light Chasers. So go, you can get them on Apple Music or Spotify or whatever, but check out The Meaning of Eight or Light Chasers. Like, those are your starter albums. Mm-hmm. They're objectively way better. They hold together better, maybe, as albums.
Like, so you kind of felt recorded for that too. Like, it's, that's super interesting.
Well, I mean, you've got the way I thought about this in terms of picking an album, was you've got, your best, your favorite, and the most important. The best to me is Radiohead. In my lifetime, among the bands that I am like very intimately familiar with, like, the best band is Radiohead. They have the strongest canon of work, and they're the best. Like, they're like a desert island band. Like, I listen to those albums and I find something new to like every time. The most important one of my bands that I like, I mean, you'd have to go with like Bob Dylan or the Beatles or something like that. But my favorite is Cloud Cult. Like, Cloud Cult is the one I keep coming back to. It means the most to me personally. Like, I'm like, this is my, what I is, this is like the what's playing in my head.
I love that distinction.
I mean, Pitchfork kind of makes that distinction, but in the opposite way. Like, Light Chasers has a 5.4.
Put that website away.
Like, college for me, though. Like,
I mean, one thing with Cloud Cult that I think you have to come to terms with is they're a deeply uncool band, and I like that they're all, they have a little bit of that like David Foster Wallace feeling of like they're a little bit.
Oh, you're so right.
They're like a little bit engaging with like irony and coolness in a way of being like, we're going to come on stage. And the guy comes out and he dances around barefoot and he plays his pedals and loopers with his feet. And they're just come out like lunatics and they're singing these frankly quite embarrassing lyrics, but they're, you know, like, you know, like believe in yourself, no one else can do that for you kind of a message. Like it's like if you read this as a poem, you'd be embarrassed by it, right. But somehow it works because of the earnestness that they approach it with. And it somehow I listen to the sappiest shit in their lyrics and I'm like, wow, this is really what I needed to hear today. And it sounds very earnest and sincere. But like, of course, Pitchfork is the most inculcated to that of any publication in the world. Like there's nothing will pierce the heart of the guy stroking his goatee and going like, okay. No, it's a 5.4.
I mean, this is an analogy that will not make sense to a lot of young people today, but there was a time when you could go into a record store in a college rock town, like a college town, go into a record store and ask advice from a person working in there who was usually a really pretentious dick. And you know what? It's a great way to find out what kind of stuff a pretentious dick likes, but it's not necessarily a way to find good music. That's how I feel about Pitchfork. I mean, that and the fact that, like, for fucking, I don't know how many years now, it is just, I haven't looked at it in years. Ever since the Travis Morrison incident, I will not open the website. But, like, it's just so clearly the worst of blogging, of that whole, like, well, I kind of have something to say about this, but really mostly I want you to notice me writing about it. And it's like, it's not.
But what you want is it in High Fidelity, that scene where Jack Black puts on Bill Callahan? Isn't mm-hmm. that it? And dances around like a lunatic?
Is that the Smog guy? That's Smog?
Yeah, yeah. He puts on like, what is this? It's like Cold Blooded Old Times. Is that the song?
I don't know. I know Julius Caesar. That's the only one I know.
Anyway,
I am Star Wars. That's what you want.
You want a guy who's. I fucking love that guy.
That guy's crazy as hell, man.
But you want, when you go into the record store, you want someone who's just like unabashed. Like they're not trying to be cool. They're just trying to get you some.
You want
fun
to be
music.
Like my comic shop where you go in and say, you know, I like Superman when I was a kid. What would I like now? And that's a dumb question that they're happy to answer and go like, oh, there's all kinds of stuff. These directions. If you want something more, blah, 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 blah. You want somebody like that. But if you want to find out what a pretentious dick likes, there's a website for that.
My final closing thoughts on Cloud Cult, and then I'm happy to entertain any questions, are number one, another thing I like about Cloud Cult is there's no bands like them. You can't describe Cloud Cult to someone and be like, mm-hmm. oh, they're kind of like this band. There's no one like them. They're singular. They're just singular out there. Like there's nothing, no one else has that sound or that business model or anything about them. And and then I was also going to say, I thought it was interesting to talk about when we would listen to these albums. Oh, yeah. And this is I had a shitty day and it's raining and I have to drive home. Like I would put a Cloud Cult album on and feel a little bit better about my life and be like, it's one of those like put everything in perspective. We're all going to die. You know, let's all just be human beings for a second, but in a way that's not morbid and sad, but uplifting.
Good criteria. Alex, you can talk about Japan Droids?
Yeah, I don't have much to say about Japan Droids.
No, say much, because I don't know. I've heard the name so many times, and I was really struck by like how fucking in my wheelhouse this band is.
Yeah, what's the deal? Why'd you pick this?
Okay, so Japan Droids, they're like a typical kind of like post-punk, like garage, like weird, two weird kids from Canada. And they released their first album called Post Nothing in 2009. And that's when I was like graduating high school. And it was okay. It was really angry and kind of flat. It's just two guys. And that album is entirely just one guitar and a set of drums. But they were actually going to break up just because they felt like the band wasn't going anywhere. And the lead singer thought he didn't consider himself a lead singer. They were like looking for a singer and he's like, I'm not great at this. But then they wrote this album called Celebration Rock. And it was very much like, this band is very much the two of them. Like there's really not a front man. Like they're very, very tuned to one another as performers. They're one of my favorite bands to see live, even though I really like the like crazy theater performances. Like Cloud Cult has always been amazing when I've seen them. Sufjan Stevens is probably also another one of my favorite guys to see live. But they were just so like naked and pure. Mm-hmm. And Celebration Rock has the same feeling as our first album, but it's like they gave no fucks and put everything into this. I don't know. I'm not good at articulating why I like music.
Oh, I am.
Anyway,
I'm so
which is
good at
I know
it. So
you are very,
good
very good.
I like it a lot. I listened to it when I was in my
no,
20s, and now I'm 50.
Well, that's the thing. Is like this album, like it came out like right when I like started dating Maddie, and like it was when a lot of like bad shit in my life had ended, and sort of. Yeah, I don't know.
It's like you're Here Comes the Sun.
I don't know.
No, I just mean in the sense that, like, the thing is, you don't know. When you're in shit, you know that it used to be better, and someday it might get less bad. But, like, when you're in the shit, it's hard to know when you're really emerging from it. I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but I feel like there are certain albums where you're like, oh, shit, this is when things were really changing, and I didn't even realize it yet. And now it's emblematic of that change that I was going through.
Yeah, like actually seeing them live right after Celebration Rock came out and thinking that it was going to be like one of their last shows on their last tour and being like, okay, this is something I'm going to remember for the rest of my life. And there's nothing like this that will ever happen to me again. And it was like just bittersweet. And it's a very energetic album, but it also just feels nice to me, or at least by the end. Like one of the criteria for like picking a perfect album for me is also the track listing, but the story arc as well, mm-hmm. like how they fall into temptation and then eventually emerge. It's very like Nick and Nora's what is that dumb movie?
Thin Man?
With
Of course, I think it's a movie from the 30s.
Yeah, no. Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist, that one. oh, it's so bad. But I don't know, especially like the last track. Most people like The House That Heaven Built, which is the single that kind of like put them on the map and made even Pitchfork soften their hearts for Japan Droids. Yeah, mm-hmm. But the way that album plays out with the last song, it's just absolutely perfect to me. The chords are this album also is just one guitar and drums, and it's I don't know. It's unlike a lot of music I enjoy because, you know, it on the surface it's like, yeah, here are two angry boys who are sad most of the time, but there's an earnestness that most emo bands and most, like, I would call them punk bands. Most people would disagree who are Merlin's age. I don't know. They're also just very nice. I don't meet a lot of bands that I actually, like, I meet them and I'm like, oh, you are nice boys. You're some nice boys. But that's all I really have to say about it is listen to it. It's also an album that I can really put on at any time because it has so many weird emotions all throughout it. Like you can skip to the song that has that exact feeling, you know?
Yeah.
Which I guess some people have called it immature in that way because it's like, oh, this is the sad teenager song. This is the redemption song. This is the party song. But I kind of like that, especially because it goes in an order that just seems like a perfect story arc to me.
I got a feeling of listening to this album. It felt desperate to me.
Yeah.
Like there was like, it felt like Last Night on Earth kind
mm-hmm.
of a feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Like urgent.
Urgency, yeah.
Yeah, which I like that. It's a good vibe in music. I mean, I get that a lot in pop music now. I feel like a lot of the sort of stadium pop music that happens nowadays has that sort of like anthemic, you know, like third act of a movie feeling, which I definitely got from this. But I'm curious, like when do you listen to this album?
All the time.
Because it was like a little like I was in the shower listening to it and I was like, oh, this is a little
it's really
intense.
Abrasive.
Like,
it,
yeah.
I wouldn't say abrasive. Intense is a much better word.
There's
for
another.
It.
There's Alex. Have we talked about Team Dresh?
No, I don't know who that is.
Oh my god. Talk about urgency. Go check out Personal Best by Team Dresh. Like today, like, go listen to Personal Best by Team Dresh today. And that's all I'm going to say about that. I want to let you just discover this on your own terms, but check it out.
Oh, that was my other criteria for good, or a perfect album is you can't, like, have an outside influence of someone saying, oh, this is so cool, this is something
I'm saying
great.
This one, because I think this one, there, it's, if this is not in your wheelhouse, I'll buy a hat and eat it.
Right, right. You're not giving me, like, any context, though, which I like.
Yeah, go look at the cover.
I'm, yeah. Well, eventually, Japan, this album was so successful, they are still touring, and I think I'm seeing them tomorrow night. Is today the first? Look, yeah. I'm seeing them tomorrow.
Wow. Go look at the Personal Best. Look at the titles of the first five songs. Kickoff track is Faggotarian and Dyke. Number two, Hate the Christian Right. Number three, She's Crushing My Mind. Number four, Free Wheel. Number five, She's Amazing.
Oh, God, it's so gay. I'm so excited for this.
It's super duper gay, and it's fucking gorgeous and passionate punk rock. Like, just paint-peelingly good fucking lesbian punk rock. Oh, they're so good. Hey, should we, I know we're running long here. Should we talk about, have we over-talked about this? I just had a couple criteria I wanted to mention, and why this is the thing. Here's the thing. Everything that's in the challenge is in the challenge. As long as you, like, attempt the challenge, you know, like, if you fail, that's interesting, too. I think I failed at this challenge, but I love the journey. So I sent you a screen grab of this. I had a bunch of stuff that was just kind of like, I started out, of course, this is the way writing works. I started out with all the stuff that I knew was like, here's the things, here's my basic, what would you call it? Like, core criteria of no duh stuff, right? Like, this has to be, not be a compilation, right? No best ofs or greatest hits. How do you pick a perfect album? It can't be a various artists collection. It's got to be at least 30 minutes long, because there are some EPs that are pretty perfect just by virtue of the fact that they're so short. Production sequencing count. Don't care so much about popularity. There's two things I just wanted to say that I feel like I should like it as much or more than when I first heard it. I'm not married to that. But the other one was, and this is my ineffable, not useful thing that I still think is important. When I say it's a perfect album, was it perfect at what it was attempting to do? Like a version of the Roger Ebert criteria. Was it perfect at what it was trying to do? Importantly, regardless of whether the band themselves knew what they were trying to do. Like, did it end up being a fantastic document of that moment in time for the band? I think that's a huge piece of it for me. Like, you can have these bands just push out album after album of really good stuff. You're like, yeah, that's really good. Like, it's really hard to pick which one's the best. But there's other ones where I do feel like you can feel like there's something personal about this thing, and the fact that it got made seems miraculous. It's like seeing a shooting star go by, and you're like, no matter how many people I explain this to, it's never going to give you the feeling of being there when a shooting star arrived and went away.